This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C. and this is The Breakfast Grill. 5G, IoT, EV, autonomous vehicles, cloud, AI. Scratching your head what all that means? You're not alone. What's certain is that the one thing all these technologies can't live without are semiconductor chips. But when we think about the semiconductor industry, we think of these mega facilities with engineers in boiler suits inspecting chips. But the industry value chain is broad and complicated. Cue one of its players, QES, a 10-year-old inspection, test, measuring, analytical, and automated handling equipment distributor and manufacturer used in the semiconductor industry that has gone from strength to strength. With us today to share their journey and plans in the future is QES Group Managing Director Chu Nee Wing. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. So for those uninitiated, can you perhaps simplify for us, right, the level of precision and specialization required in these equipment?
Just a quick run through. You know, we started out very different from the Penang big boys, you know. So we started out from a distribution of high-tech equipment and all that, set up the ASEAN infrastructure. And subsequently, we went into manufacturing. Now, manufacturing is, and we make equipment relating to the processes, like our customers need to, for example, inspect their wires after the bonding process. Our customers will need to inspect the wafers after certain processes. And along the way, we have customers also asking us to do some automation of some of the equipment, and they want to have manual processes change into a fully automatic machines. And we actually do this part, you know, to provide all these automated equipments. Now, to your question about how precise it's going to be, it's going to be, have to be very precise, because let's say you inspect some of the wafers or some of the wires, it goes down to a micron level. A micron is like, you know, it's less than the hair thickness. So it's like you need the machine to be highly precise, highly reliable as well.
I mean, you talk about manufacturing, but if you look at your numbers, a large chunk, I think close to 80% of your revenue, is still distribution, no?
Yes. No question about it. Of course, in the investing community, the narrative that we have in terms of QES is, yeah, the numbers are, majority of them are from distribution house. Now, not forgetting, we started from distribution 30 years ago. This is a very established core business of what we have been doing. And we have like 2,500 customers, you know, spread across in the different industrial segments. Manufacturing came in just, like you said, just about 10 years ago. And we started very, very small, you know, and from there we started to grow. And we IPO QES Group somewhere March 2018. That's about, you know, three years ago or 3.5 years ago. And we are going to expand the manufacturing. So it's a gradual increase of our capabilities and capability of our manufacturing ability.
So, but what would be the percentage of revenue in manufacturing, say, in 5 years for QES?
Good question, Philip. It's always in my mind that I wanted to have a manufacturing, let's say a ratio, you know, of our total revenue. Our manufacturing contribution should be in the range of 35-40% of the total. Right now, we're on an average of maybe 15, you know, over the last 4 years. So I'm trying to move this value ratio upwards towards 35-40%. That's the plan, you know, over the next couple of years. Now, to your question about milestones, yes, we are expanding our Highcombe Glen Mary plant. Currently, we're about to start refurbishing to increase the manufacturing capacity, you know, from making close to 50, 60 machines a year, we might be making about 100 machines a year based on this capacity. And I think we have announced also we will actually have a new joint venture with a U.S. company called Applied Engineering. We announced it somewhere around a couple of weeks back. And then, of course, we have also applied for a piece of land in Batangkawan. And we, in principle, we have got some approval from Penang Development Corporation or Invest Penang. And we will have our second plant in Penang in conjunction with the joint venture with the US.
And give us a sense, the distinction in margins between distribution and manufacturing. How much richer are the margins for manufacturing versus distribution? Because I do notice that your distribution margins are under pressure, right?
Yeah, traditionally distribution, let's say, is standard equipment product line, you know, so, you know, it's quite, I would think, quite marginal. If you make, you know, 20%, is considered pretty good, you know. But not forgetting that we have a strong recurring income base. You know, we have like current install base of machine about 12,674 machine, the last count. And of course, out of that, maybe 6,000-7,000 is active because some of them is like more than 20 years old. Now, that recurring income generates on average about close to 40 million a year, ringgit, yeah? And recurring income is like you send your car, service and all that. So we get the spare parts changes and the labor and all that. And it's spread across the world. Of course, majority of them in ASEAN. And we get good margins on that. Maybe in a range of, I would think, you know, 30-35% on average. So that combined, because it's labor and engineering know-how, right? So when you combine this, distribution becomes a reasonable margin, as announced in our results. Now, manufacturing is a different ball game. So it's a, I would think it's a mix. You know, some, that's why I'm always going for new products development. So once I have a certain niche area, I think I can command better margins, you know. But those very competitive areas, you want market share, you might have to sacrifice a little bit of margin because this equipment making business is also very competitive. So we are competing every day, every month, every year. So again, you mix them up. I would think if I can get, you know, close to 40% margin for manufacturing, I'm fine with that. You know, to me, it's that's what I'm aiming at.
With the lockdown at EMCO and MCO, I'm sure your manufacturing facilities were under a lot of pressure. Give us a sense of how much production has declined in this quarter two as a result of all these lockdowns that have taken place.
Yes, I would say it will have some impact. You know, because we are currently, I don't have a dual site. You know. Of course, when you have a dual site, it may have some risk mitigation, right? But we are all currently all based in, you know, Selangor. So, and a peak, you know, I mean, even now, you know, Selangor is still a peak in terms of the COVID cases and all that. So we were shut down for a while. And of course, the METI and the relevant industry associations helped to convince the government to allow us to operate at 60%.
So how is production like for quarter two then? I mean, how much depression are you seeing versus quarter one? And what's your outlook then?
Okay. Now, in terms of quarter two, we think it's some impact, but not so significant because the lockdown was, to a certain extent, not too long. Yeah. So, and also, it's also towards the end of the quarter two already. So a lot of things has been scheduled accordingly. So we think the impact is going to be not as great, you know, and it will probably impact the quarter three, I think, the delivery. But I hope we can get out of it with a lot of vaccination, all the PCAS, PPV and all that. So once all these things is vaccinated, let's say our workers, let's say, for example, 80% vaccinated, I believe we are working with the government and trying to get at least 80% of our workers come back to work if our target is 80% vaccinated in terms of workers. So going forward, Q3, Q4, I think overall, if you ask me, year on year, 2021 will still be, I mean, in terms of QES, we think 2021 will still be much better than 2020. Yeah?
So strategy moving forward, you said dual site. Are you looking at setting up facilities outside Malaysia to mitigate future risk then?
Okay, we don't have plans right now to set up outside of Malaysia. What we are doing now is a dual site itself of KL and Penang, still in Malaysia. Yeah. So I don't have a specific plan for offshore third facility, for example. But, you know, we are working hard to get the results from China market. And, you know, even the results are slowly trickling in. But we think, you know, China is a huge market for semiconductor equipment. And if we can reach certain milestone, again, so I said, let's say, for example, we are at $1-2 million a year now. But one day, 2-3 years from now, or 4 years from now, if we hit $10-15 million a year of equipment, then I would consider setting up a plant in China to address the domestic China market itself.
I mean, trickling in is a very modest remark. If I look at your China contribution to your revenue, quarter one 2022, it's jumped by more than a factor of 40. What's driving that China contribution for you?
Yes, of course, we have some delivered machines in Q1 versus the previous Q1. So that also, we started from a low base. You must imagine that our total results, you know, let's say, Q1 of 2020, you know, for example, our total revenue, and then China is just contributing less than, 2% of the revenue. So it's not significant. So when I compare against what my peers are doing, you know, the China contribution is like sometimes 15%, 20% of the total revenue. So that tells me a story that our drive to get our sales to China is, again, not good enough. That's why I'm saying it's trickling in. But of course, in the Q1 2021, we get a large equipment ship out. So that is a big contribution there. So there's a big jump. But I wanted to have a more sustainable volume. You see, in our line, in our businesses, we need to have a volume that I can reach certain inflection point, so to speak. Then, you know, my cost will not rise that high anymore, but the revenue and the GP will go, you know, significantly higher once you reach that volume.
Yeah, I think the inflection point you refer to is you have economies of scale where you become cost competitive. And that is the biggest challenge with China, isn't it? I mean, I talk to so many small businesses. They love to expand to China, but so worried about being able to be cost competitive with their Chinese counterparts who can match them and bring down prices lower. How will QES distinguish themselves with perhaps those China or, you know, providers who can do it at much lower prices?
Yeah, I mean, no question about that. There's always a worry that the IP copyrights issues and all that. So, but I strongly believe because we have been doing the business with all the big multinational companies, semiconductor, and these are all giants, you know, rising from US, Europe, and all that. So, we have a lot of application know-how. Actually, some of these Chinese companies looked up to us. Because why? They think that we have a lot of this application know-how and experience that we have leverage advantage over the local players there currently. Currently. So, but you give them another 5 years, I don't know, 5 years or more, then they could be a strong competing player. So by then, you know, as I said earlier on, how do I mitigate them? How do I address this threat? So the only choice I have, right, what I'm thinking right now is probably having a factory serving factory in China, serving the domestic Chinese market. Maybe we will tie up with some large group that probably can also help us to mitigate this risk.
And we're going to talk about how you're going to build that practical know-how later through your partnerships. On The Breakfast Grill today, we have with us QES Group Managing Director Chu Ni Wing. Stay tuned as we discuss their international expansion plans.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill, we have with us QES Group Managing Director Chu Ni Wing. Now, early on, you said you had an IPO in 2018. You raised, I think, 28 million ringgit. I think that was to help fulfill your manufacturing ambitions. You then did another private placement 2 years later. Can you share with us the logic in how you capital raised for the past 3 years?
Okay. The second, to address your question, the second fundraising, the private placement, we thought a few things here. One is, of course, expanding our manufacturing facility in the Glenmary, Shalom. So one part of plan, we are building a clean room facility, which is, I think, is important for us going forward. Clean room is not cheap, you know, so that's why we raise some fund to do that. And we are going to do a few more product development, which costs money and of course time, effort. So that also will be part and parcel of the product placement that we did in the second round. And, you know, a small amount is allocated for China expansion plan. Unfortunately, we can't use it at all because we can't exhibit our product and machine there. We don't have engineers that can travel to China to do a better branding exercise or visiting our clients. Zip, zero. So that unfortunately derailed us a little bit in terms of our so-called usage of this second round of funding.
But if you reflect, would you have preferred to do the placement first and the IPO later rather than the IPO in 2018 and then the private placement now?
Okay, you caught me here, Philip, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, Leo, my partner, and myself, we are engineers, you know, so we're working, you know, really working hard over the last 30 years. I found the company 28 years ago. I mean, when I was 28 years old, you know, so that was 30 years back. And of course, when you talk about financial, you know, corporate exercises and all that, we are not too familiar, you know. So, but we recognize there's a need for us to expand manufacturing. We need funding. We need, you know, a platform. So IPO is a natural choice to do that. So we did that and we went ahead. And there was a talk, you know, why do you go into an ACE market? Your results seems to qualify for main market, you know. So we were saying that, you know, that time, you know, we do a lot of work, you know, 2 years of preparing for IPO and all that. And we just do not want to throw it down and then restart to the main board again. So we say, when it just go with the ACE market first, that's okay. And then from there, and then say, hopefully we can do up the results and then hopefully we can migrate to the main board once we meet the criteria, you know, of 20 million after tax or next 3 years, you know, and maybe your cash flow has to be positive. But some of the criteria is that I think we'll do that, you know, and that's another milestone for me to try to bring QES from ACE to Maine, hopefully, you know.
When do you envision that to happen?
Oh, it depends. Results of 2021 is good. We meet all the criteria. Why not? You know, to me, it's a better place to be. You know, every ACE market company is probably trying to migrate to Maine, you know, so that's the aim.
And I want to talk about one of your key enablers. In the funding, you talked about developing three key products. And you also signed a JV with US-based Applied Engineering in May. Can you share with us what the intention of that joint venture was?
Okay. It's a very interesting company. Quick history a little bit. I was introduced to them by Maida, actually. Some of the ex-MIDA officers that used to work for MIDA, you know, rang me up and said, hey, Chu, are you keen to look in this company? Because they're trying to find a local Malaysian partner. So I did that and started communicating. And from there, I find this company, they are making high-tech electromechanical modules. And they also do new products. And their market segment is so very diverse, but very focused in semiconductor front-end. Now, that attracts me a little bit because QES, our manufacturing, we make a lot of test and assembly back-end equipment, but we do have some of the front-end related product line, you know, but of course not competing with the front-end big boys, you know, but more towards the, I would say, if you know semiconductor processes, it's like the end of the front-end and the beginning of the back-end. If you know what I mean. So that's the interfacing part here. And we make equipment for that. So if I have this collaboration with Applied Engineering US, I get the exposure because they make some of these modules. They make some of this quality, very reliable electromechanical modules and all that. And it gives me a exposure and also hopefully this joint venture company can also make some of these modules for us. You know, I can reduce the time to market, you know. If I can launch my product much, much faster with this joint venture.
And tell me about facilities. Is there a facility going to be built?
Due to time constraint, we can't wait for the land to be built, the factory and all that. So we are going ahead to rent a facility and we're going to get a facility, a key to the detached factory in Batu Kawan or so. Somewhere around September, Okay, we're going to do a lot of facilitization. So, and we plan to start a simple production somewhere around December. So that's the timeline.
And a forecast, right, in 3 years' time, how much revenue and bottom line will this JV deliver for QES?
Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers with me right now, you know. But I, you know, when we start talking to the US, I said I wanted more. You know, can I have, you know, 45%, for example, of the joint venture? You know, because, of course, they want to remain in control, that's for sure. Then they came back to me and said, oh, no, Mr. Chiu, you know, maximum I can give it to you is 30%, you know. And are you okay with that? You know, so I said, yeah, 30%, yeah, I'll just take it, you know. And that tells a story, right? Because they think that this particular unit they want to do is going to be profitable. They want more, you see. So it tells me a story when they do a joint venture like that. And, of course, when I spoke to the CEO and all that, they say, as much as they can, they want it to be profitable year two. Mm. You know, the kind of aggressive plans, you know. But I don't have the exact models because, again, I've not seen them face to face. It's always Zoom and team meetings.
Well, hopefully you'll see them in person soon.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. But we have hired a local general manager, so he's going to come up. He already came on board, by the way. So then from there, we will actually gradually hire up to 20 engineers and operations people in the timeline of probably less than a year, you know. So we're going to gradually ramp up the human resource part of it. Yeah, all right.
And as we move to the question about being a shareholder investor, you know, one thing I noticed that you made a net profit every year, with really just one rare exception, you know, second quarter 2019. How do you intend to reward shareholders? Because you haven't paid any dividend since you IPO'd. What's the plan here to reward your shareholders?
Okay, let me correct you on that, Philip. I think we paid a dividend one time. We declared, I think, 3 million of dividend to the shareholders. That was after the IPO. So we did that once. Now, specifically, we don't have any dividend policy, you know, but I would think, you know, because I'm also an interested party, and I would think that, you know, if the company makes enough profit to what I think is a fair and reasonable profit, I would gladly, you know.
And what is reasonable profit for you? What is your marker for reasonable profit?
But both, right? You know, that year, if you make, you know, 8-10 million or more than 10 million, there's some marker for me that I should reward the existing shareholders, you know, just for the sake of speaking. Don't hold me to it. As you're asking a question in a public air, you know, I just want to just give you an idea of what I think, you know, the thought process in my head about, of course, you have to go through the board, go through all the relevant authorities, and then the cash flow, the retained earnings, and blah, blah, blah. So I would think that anything you make every year, you make more than 10 million, I think we should reward the shareholders some form of dividend. You know.
And on that note, today on The Breakfast Grill, we have with us QES Group Managing Director, Chiu Nee Wing. I'm Philip C. This is The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.